Nick.
Hi, Angie.
I am so excited to be back with you today for part two of our series, Shuffling Through History, Everything We Know, Don't Know, and Think We Know About the Tarot. If you are here today and you haven't listened to part one, I would highly encourage you to go back and listen to that episode first, as it covers some very important information about the origins of the tarot cards and the creation of the Tarot de Marseille. That episode basically kicks off in the 1300s and finishes in the 1700s. So there's a lot of juicy information covered there.
Just a little bit of ground, just a few years there.
Yeah, just a little bit.
If you're enjoying this series so far, we hope that you'll lend us your support by sharing it with a friend, leaving us a rating and review on Apple Podcasts or Spotify. You can do that right now as you're listening to me say this. And by joining our Patreon community, where we share long form essays, offer discounts on workshops and readings, and host monthly tarot hangs, which have really become like a favorite moment in my life these days. I've really loved those.
Yeah, they've just been super great. I've been really enjoying them every month. So
yeah. And your donation there will support the payment of our guest interviews, which will be starting back up in a couple of weeks. And I did the math this morning and we're already at season 5 of this podcast. I really can hardly believe that. It was something I started during the pandemic and wasn't sure if we would keep going. And it's just been amazing. So thank you all for being here and listening and supporting it.
Yay. Okay, so as we mentioned last time, today's episode is going to be completely devoted to discussing the history of the Romani people and the profound influence that they have had on the tarot. Now, before we start, we want to again offer the caveat that we are not professional historians. We are simply dedicated tarot practitioners and nerds who want to create this series as a resource, for anyone who wants to dive a little deeper into the history of tarot.
And we want to begin today's episode by situating the story of the Romani people within the overall arc of tarot history. And Roma have been ostracized, vilified, and violently persecuted for centuries. They've also tended to be erased from the tarot narrative, despite their enormous contributions, most likely due to the fear that non-Romani practitioners have around claims that tarot is a closed Romani practice.
We want to name that elephant in the room. Neither Nick nor I are Romani, and we know that there are some people out there who believe that this means that we should not be working with the cards. Our hope today is to share multiple perspectives on this question, to dispel stereotypes and misconceptions, and to uplift the voices of the Romani people and the incredible work that they are doing.
So let's dive into some of this history. According to Dr. Margareta Matas, a scholar from Romania, director of the FXB Center for Health and Human Rights Roma program and Harvard instructor, Roma is an ethnic minority group without a country or a land to claim as their own, but with a population of about 12 to 14 million Roma living all across the world. The majority of Roma live in Europe, but there are also Roma in the US, Australia, Latin America, and the Middle East. The National World War II Museum in New Orleans explains that Roma can be traced back to the Punjab region of India. The Romani language, the source for the appellation Roma, is related to Sanskrit. More than 1,000 years ago, Roma were displaced during a series of Muslim invasions and began to migrate out of India, heading westward in successive waves sometime between the 6th and 11th centuries. And that's a broad range, but I found different sources claiming different things. There was actually a 2012 study I found that The Guardian published that for the first time linked Roma back to, or the expansion of Roma back to the 6th century. And that was based on some actual DNA testing that they had done. So, you know, somewhere in between 6th and 11th century. They crossed the Middle East and arrived in continental Europe during the 13th and 14th centuries. Many were taken as prisoners of war back to what is now modern day Turkey during the Ottoman plunder of the Byzantine Empire.
According to a 2012 article from The Guardian, the earliest written account of the Romani in Europe dates back to the 16th century and incorrectly labels them as Egyptians. This misnaming of the Romani, based on the way that Europeans visually perceived them, was eventually shortened to Egyptian and then Gypsy, spelled with an I, or Gypsy, spelled with a Y. As persecution against the Roma intensified, the name became used as a slur. According to the Oxford English Dictionary, the first known recorded definition of the term gypped dates back to the 1899 Century Dictionary, which says that it is probably, quote, an abbreviation of gypsy, as applied to a sly, unscrupulous fellow, end quote. It also appears in 1914 in Lewis Jackson and C.R. Hellier's Vocabulary of Criminal Slang. The noun gyp was described at the time as being, quote, derived from a popular experience with thieving gypsies, end quote. As a verb, the term is defined as to flim flam, I love that one.
Yeah.
And to cheat by means of guile and manual dexterity. The example given for how to properly use this term in a sentence is, quote, gyp this boob with a deuce, end quote. And as horrible and as ridiculous as that quote is, it's interesting to note the connotation, the connection that's made between the Romani people and the cards.
Yeah, the word deuce kind of makes me think that maybe there was a connection being made with, you know, cardamancy there. But that, yeah. what a strange, you know, sentence there.
I hear it with like that old timey accent, like, see, this boob with a deuce.
Yeah, totally.
Anyway, a 2013 episode of the NPR podcast Code Switch explains that, quote, we see the same phenomenon across several languages, not only in English. Victor Hugo, in his epic, The Hunchback of Notre Dame, noted that the medieval French term for the Roma was Egyptians. In Spanish, the word for gypsy is gitano, which comes from the word egipcio, which means Egyptian.
I was curious if you had heard anything about that or knew anything about that.
I saw this in several places, and I know that gitano has kind of a negative connotation in Spanish. It's really like, it's a word that you hear a lot in like songs and lyrics, and even like Shakira has popularly used that word in the past, but I don't know where that lands.
So Dr. Matash explains that Roma were very good with metal and woodcrafts and were also gifted singers and good soldiers. In fact, it appears that as Roma began to arrive in Europe, they were initially well received by the Europeans because they came with new knowledge and skills. And, you know, how surprised are we that a bunch of white Europeans were excited to extract some skills from some new people? However, Dr. Matash also points out that in many European countries, Romani people were quickly enslaved. In fact, there is a 500-year history of slavery in Roma and Romania, the abolishment of which roughly coincides with the abolishment of slavery in the US. As they migrated further and further from their homeland, their language and culture evolved into multiple subgroups. In an interview on Rise Up Good Witch podcast, Romani dancer and fortune teller Jasmina von Thiel explained that there are 62 distinct Romani dialects, meaning there are over 62 distinct Romani cultures around the world. And that episode is really fantastic. I recommend going and listening to that episode on Rise Up Good Witch. Political scientist Gunter Louis claims that evidence of the Roma in Greece dates to the 14th century during the late Byzantine period. The Greek term, I'm definitely going to mispronounce this. I actually am just going to spell it A-T-Z-I-N-G-A-N-O-I, was coined to classify them. The root word for this term translates as untouchable. The nomadic lifestyle of the Romani, along with their distinctive dress and language and their trade skills, which threatened the European merchant class, all contributed to their intense persecution.
Ooh, yeah, doing research for this episode was really enlightening for me. And I knew that the persecution existed, but reading the extent of the persecution was really difficult to read and to learn about. In 1998, the Holy Roman Emperor Maximilian I ordered the expulsion of the Roma, accusing them of supporting the Turks, who some of the Roma at this time had converted to Islam in areas under Ottoman control. However, the order was not stringently enforced. Many more such acts followed, and according to Jennifer Iluzzi, between 1551 and 1774, rulers in the German lands passed more than 130 laws against the Roma.
Wow.
Let's take a moment now to just sync up this history with what we already have learned about the tarot. You'll remember from our first episode that the tarot is thought to have originated in Italy sometime in the mid-1400s and then traveled to France and Switzerland from there. According to the National Geographic, German officials wrote about encountering Romani near Hamburg in 1417. people wrote about the Romani in Barcelona, Spain in 1425. And by early 1500s, Romani were living in Sweden, England, and in Scotland. And when we lay out the history like this, it's pretty easy to see how the creation of the tarot might have been misattributed to the migration of the Romani.
According to the Human Rights Fund Progress, a charitable organization founded in 2011, which seeks to raise the level of the legal culture and legal awareness of the citizens of Ukraine, fortune telling has been an integral part of Romani culture for hundreds of years. Traditionally, Roma fortune tellers were always women. The art acts as a livelihood for many, but it is important to note that divination is only practiced as a source of income with non-Romani people, never amongst their own people. Common methods of fortune telling among the Romani people have included palmistry, tea leaf reading, cartomancy, and crystal ball. In her book, Confessions of a Tarot Reader, fourth generation Romani reader Jane Stern, who I had not heard of, but was very interesting. She was a travel and food writer and also a volunteer EMT whose life was made famous in a Kathy Bates movie from 2005 called Ambulance Girl, in which she portrays Jane Stern's life. Had you heard of that movie?
No, I've never heard of it, but I love Kathy Bates. I want to go and watch it now.
Yeah, me too. But in her book, Confessions of a Tarot Reader, she writes, quote, "In my family, reading tarot was the sole territory of women," end quote. And Stern goes on to share that she learned to divine using playing cards first and didn't switch to tarot decks until her 20s, which is something that I heard from different sources as I was researching this. Mm-hmm. Similarly, Paulina Verminsky and Jessica Reedy, who have a wonderful podcast called Romanistan, which I also highly recommend. In episode 2 of that podcast, they speak specifically about the history of tarot and cartomancy and Romani culture. And they share that they were taught also divination by their families using a variety of tools, including palmistry, tea leaves, and playing cards. And I really recommend that episode. According again to the Human Rights Fund Progress website, quote, "In Western Europe, fortune telling is usually done by palm reading, while in Eastern Europe, coffee beans are often thrown to form a pattern. Fortune telling was one of the occupations mentioned in the early reports of Roma. For example, in 1422 in Belgium and in the same year in Italy. The first record of palmistry in England is in 1530, end quote.
So now we have here the spread of the Enlightenment ideas concerning the rights of man from the late 1600s to the early 1800s, and the impact of the Great French Revolution in the late 1700s, and that all worked against the older European hostility to the Roma. Although one should not romanticize this period, notions of exclusion and expulsion began to give way to still problematic notions of improvement. One can discern a new fascination with Romani culture at the same time an outgrowth of the Romantics' investigation of folk traditions. The spread of industrial capitalism from the UK around the globe brought factories and mechanized labor and extremely long working days. The Romani life of restless movement soon appealed to many who felt alienated by this new capitalist order. Many European and later North American artists and intellectuals saw the Romani culture as free-spirited and closer to nature and idealized its wanderer's existence.
And before you go on, I just wanted to say, I thought this was a little interesting and maybe even sort of a warning a bit for us, like non-Indigenous, white people in America right now. I feel like there is a wonderful, new bit of attention that's being paid to Indigenous culture, rightly so. And as we worry about climate change and all of that, I feel like we're turning to more Indigenous thoughts and ways of being. Mm-hmm. But I do, when I read this, I a little bit felt a similarity with fetishizing, I guess, this Romani culture and now sort of fetishizing Indigenous culture. I have no answer to the appropriate balance point of that, because I do believe that uplifting is very important. Mm-hmm. But I guess I just kind of I saw a little bit of a parallel with fetishization.
Yes, I think that, I mean, and most obviously we can see that through social media, even in like people's the handles that they choose for to represent themselves and the way that they choose to present through clothing and stuff. It's just very telling.
Yeah.
Anyway, Here we have, if you remember from last season's Tarot and Pop Culture episode, we talked a little bit about Bizet's opera Carmen, which is a perfect example of the mix of distrust and fascination with which the Roma have been viewed during this time. Marxist social thinker Theodore W. Adorno argued that parts of Carmen express a, quote, envy of the colorful and unfettered lives of those who were outlawed from the bourgeois world of work, condemned to hunger and rags and suspected of possessing all the happiness which the bourgeois world denied itself in its irrational rationality. I love that quote.
Yeah.
In another famous opera, Puccini's La Bohème, which is, and it has its more modern retelling in the musical Rent, we have a group of friends who are artists who live in a rundown apartment. This is where we typically hear the term bohemian being applied, and it's used to describe people who live in an unconventional lifestyle, who might be transient, who might be poor, with few interests outside of artistic pursuits. This term actually comes from the Kingdom of Bohemia, which today is the Czech Republic, nestled there between Poland and Hungary and Lithuania, where the Romani people initially experienced protection from the government when they arrived there first in the 15th century. And then later when they migrated to France, the Romani became known as Les Bohemiens. It's important to note, if we haven't already made clear, that these words are loaded and it's easy to romanticize them on their face, but they would not exist if it were not for the Romani being forced out from location to location and having to find ways to survive. Applying these terms too liberally and without consideration for the historical context can perpetuate the harm that Romani community has faced and continues to face to this day.
Yeah, I mean, that's what I kept thinking about the whole time we were researching this, is just all the tropes, you know, all the stereotypes that we've all grown up seeing, you know, in movies, and honestly, particularly in the tarot community, and perhaps even what made us curious about tarot as children, you know, is yeah, this very stereotypical depiction of, you know, Romani fortune tellers. And just, it's very painful, to the irony that the reason that they lived those lives, you know, or that these stereotypical ways of being kind of came into existence, is because they were being persecuted. And then those same persecutors, you know, started to then stereotype them and sort of, and also monopolize on those stereotypes, you know? So it's really messed up.
Exactly. That the beauty and the richness of their culture is not, I mean, it walks hand in hand with that oppression. And so I can imagine that it would be very painful to see these stereotypes in the media. The members of the public at that time may have been interested in and been sympathetic to Romani ways of being, and the establishment continued to persecute and condemn the Roma. In England and Wales, for instance, fortune telling was controlled until fairly recently by the Vagrancy Act of 1824, Section 4, which makes guilty, quote, every person pretending or professing to tell fortunes, or using any subtle craft, means, or device by palmistry or otherwise to deceive and impose on any of His Majesty's subjects. According to The Pavement, a UK-based magazine, there have been multiple amendments to the Act since 1838, with palmists and fortune tellers being removed in 1989.
So interesting. So late. I mean, I was like barely was born, but that's crazy.
I mean, that's in our history, right?
One very fascinating bit of history that we uncovered while researching this episode is the existence of an organization known as the Gypsy Lore Society, which is still around today, and which describes itself as, quote, an international association of persons interested in gypsy and traveler studies, founded in Great Britain in 1888, end quote. The first president of this organization was none other than Charles Godfrey Leland, which, when I saw that name, I was like, I think that's an esotericist. I think I've read that name before. And sure enough, Leland was a lawyer, turned journalist and amateur folklorist, as one does, well known in magical and esoteric circles. Leland is perhaps best known for his work Aradia, Gospel of the Witches, which reportedly contains the traditional beliefs of Italian witchcraft, as shared with Godfrey via a manuscript given to him by a woman named Maddalena, whom he calls his, quote, witch informant. And, you know, it's kind of interesting, this time period when anthropology was just starting to become sort of a thing. And so a lot of amateur anthropology was happening, you know, and sort of anyone thought they could just like, you know, write books on history and figure these things out. So according to Wikipedia, scholars have found that Leland took significant liberties with his research. For example, in his book, The Algonquin Legends of New England, he attempts to link Wabanaki culture with the history of the Norse and alters some of the Algonquin folktales to lend credence to his theory. He also erroneously claimed to have discovered, quote, the fifth Celtic tongue, which is the form of cant that he said was spoken among Irish travelers whom he named Shelta. So when I was researching this, it was a little bit confusing because at first I thought he just made it completely up, but it appears that this does exist, this dialect, but he created this name Shelta and he called it this fifth Celtic tongue, which wasn't, you know, the way it had been talked about before. Leland wrote several books on the Romani people who he called gypsies, including Gypsy Sorcerer and Fortune Telling, which was published in 1891. In the book, Leland sets forth his beliefs that, quote, these people have always been the humble priests of what is really the practical religion of all peasants and poor people, end quote. And while he blatantly disregards Romani fortune-telling practices as being, quote, allied to deceit, end quote, he also believes it is, quote, in a way true in itself and well worth careful examination, end quote. So when I was reading through this, and it's interesting, you can find it online. You can find PDFs of Gypsy Sorcery and Fortune-Telling for free online if you want to look at it. You know, basically, he starts by sort of basically apologizing to, you know, non-Romani people for, like, taking this seriously, quote unquote, and also he's very wishy-washy about whether he thinks there's merit to it or not. But he's basically kind of trying to imply that you kind of can't deny that something occurs, I guess, is what he's trying to say. That, you know, when you get your cards read, he's sort of claiming that it's fake, but also that there is merit to it. So he's very back and forth and sort of in the middle. But in a chapter titled Gypsy Witchcraft, the Magical Power Which is Innate in All Men and Women, How It May Be Cultivated and Developed, the Principles of Fortune Telling, short little title, Leland lists 14 phrases, which when employed during a cartomancy session, he says will, quote, often astonish the dupe, end quote. Such phrases include, quote, you had at one time great trouble with your relations or friends, end quote, and, quote, you have been three times in great danger of death, end quote. Leland also suggests that, quote, it is safe in most cases with middle-aged men to declare that they have had a lawsuit or a great dispute to some property, end quote.
So. Oh. You in the recent past have had an argument with someone you know.
yes. Which I will say that when I listened to that Romanistan episode, it was interesting because one of the hosts was sharing that when she was being taught by her family, there were certain tools that she was taught to use, such as making eye contact, you know, certain specific ways of connecting. And the host shares that she felt very conflicted about that, and that it caused her to step away from working with the cards for a little while.
Yeah, I mean, I think that there's something too about like the way in which, you know, if you're feeling like if there's a lot of stigma or shame around a particular practice, you might have to navigate it in a different way than if I were, say, like hired for a party or hired for a wedding. Like the energies are very different there.
Yes. So, That is very true. And, you know, a lot of readings, like when I was young in New York, you know, there were many drunken nights where it was like, oh, let's just get our cards read. You know, we've all read for people like that. Like I've done a lot of readings in shops where people are just like, oh, this is fun. And they're kind of not taking it seriously. And they're kind of just, you know, and it's, that's all tied up in the stereotype too. You know, they're approaching it from that, you know, cliche pop culture stereotype way. Exactly. And I certainly change the way I read for those people. Like there definitely have been times where I could just tell, okay, this person does not want to go deep. This person does, you know, this person does not want any kind of analysis. This person literally just wants to be told that they're going to make money, you know, or like literally just wants to talk about their love life or whatever it is, you know, and you kind of, you know, you listen to your client and you try to provide them with what they want, you know, and I think that's okay too, because I think there's many approaches you can take with tarot reading in general, you know, and it's okay to say, you know, how deep or not deep do you want to go with this?
Okay, so now we've discussed some of the history and dimensions of the Romani people, and we're going to get a little more into recent history. We have different Roma subgroups, like we've mentioned before, throughout Europe, including the Caldarache in southeastern Europe, the Romanicals in England, Sinti in Germany, Italy, and France, Calais in Wales, Finland, and Spain, and Portugal, and as we stated earlier, Gitano in Spain, as well as many others. Like we said, also, I know that these words are loaded. I know many of them may still carry negative connotation. I'm not sure which names the Romani in these areas prefer to go by now, or what the different terminology is.
So I'll also say along those lines that what I've been hearing from different Romani sources as I was, you know, listening to podcasts and researching is that some Romani have sort of reclaimed gypsy. That is not an invitation for non-Romani to use that term, but some have reclaimed it, some have not. I mean, it made me think of the word queer, like in the queer community, you know, and even I really struggle with that word at first because that was definitely thrown at me as a slur all of my childhood. And so it took me some time to kind of be like, oh, you know, is that okay to use it in that way? So, you know, but obviously they are the ones who should decide what they want to be called or not called, you know.
Using that word when you're inside of the community versus when you're not part of the community is definitely going to have a different energy as well. So thank you for mentioning that, Nick. All right. So the Roma identify themselves differently according to history, language, and profession, yet much is shared between the different groups. They also share a common language, Romanes, which has many different dialects, according to amnesty.org. During the Second World War, and what the Romani people refer to now as the Porajmos, which translates to the devouring, that name is so chilling.
I know.
Estimated that between 200,000 and 500,000 Roma people were murdered by the Nazi party and their collaborators, although the true number may never really be known. Many Roma throughout German-occupied Europe were forced out of their homes, incarcerated, deported, used as forced labor, and were subject to medical experimentation and forced sterilization. Thousands were killed in concentration camps, in gas vans, and thousands more died of starvation and the spread of diseases such as typhus, smallpox, and dysentery, as well as from inadequate shelter. The Roma people were believed by the Nazis to be unclean and impure, and thus suffered immensely. After the war, discrimination of the Romani continued all over Europe with official measures that closed off any opportunity for restitution. It's only until recently, in 1981, that the West German government recognized the atrocities committed, and as late as 2016, that the French president, François Hollande, acknowledged national responsibility, according to the National World War II Museum in New Orleans.
Wow.
Yeah. That was, like I said before, I knew of this. It was really, you know, really sinking in with me how recent this is.
Yeah. 2016 is so recent.
Yeah. Unfortunately, the Romani experience isn't much improved in North America. According to a Wikipedia article I found, the first enslaved Roma arrived in North America with Columbus in 1498, and later on, Spain sent more enslaved Romani between 1762 and 1800, as well as being sent by England and Scotland to Virginia. Later, after the abolition of slavery in Romania in the latter part of the 19th century, many Roma immigrated to the United States in large numbers, which brings us to today, and how we can use all of this information to better support the Romani community. Nick, do you want to lead us through some of the ways that we can do that?
So I'm going to highlight three organizations that Jesmina shared on the Rise Up Good Witch podcast episode that I mentioned earlier, but there are others. There are others that she mentions on that episode, and there are obviously others that I, you know, don't even know about, I'm sure. But I want to highlight, you know, these three, if anyone out there that's listening to this wants to support. And, you know, something that Jesmina recommended is, you know, some things you could do perhaps if you're non-Romani and you work in tarot is maybe donate, you know, certain portions of your proceeds to an organization, or just, you know, lift these organizations up when and however possible. you know, or just make private donations as you wish, trying to make some kind of reparative, you know, donation is, of course, you know, a lovely thing to do. So the first organization that Jesmina mentioned is called E-Romia, whose mission is to affirm, promote, and fight to make visible the involvement of Roma women in society and in the community. And you can learn more and donate on their website, which is e-romnja.ro, and also on their Patreon, which is patreon.com/eronia.
Next is the Damari Society in Jerusalem, a nonprofit organization aimed at combating the major issues facing the Dom Reed Gypsy community as severe discrimination, cultural marginalization, and poverty. It was founded in October 1999 in order to raise pride and cultural awareness within the Dom community. Again, you can learn more and donate at damarisociety.com.
And we also want to mention the Romney Association, which organizes and manages activities and projects that facilitate the process of female emancipation and social inclusion in modern life. And you can find more at Romney, that's romni.org.
And now we want to lift up a few Romani Tarot readers that you may want to follow and work with. The first is Jesmina Von Thiel, who is Jesmina, J-E-Z-M-I-N-A, Von Thiel, that's T-H-I-E-L-E.com. Paulina Verminsky, who is at Romani Holistic on Instagram. Aurora Sims, who is at baby_reckless, that's with three S's there at the end, on Instagram. We have Catalin Foisey, who is at Catalin Foisey on Instagram. We have Kiki Robinson, who is at Opulent Witch on Instagram. And former In Search of Tarot guest Angeliska Polacek, who is at Sister Temperance Tarot and at Angeliska on Instagram.
So if you want to dive deeper into this history, and I want to, you know, stress that we've just touched the surface. I mean, this is in no way comprehensive. But if you want to kind of dive in for yourself, you can start by checking out our sources, which we will list in the show notes. And if you've enjoyed this episode, you know, and this history that really does not get talked about nearly enough in the tarot community, if at all, honestly, please remember to share it with your friends and leave a rating and review wherever you listen. And I say that, you know, not, it sounds weird to be like, and leave, you know, leave us a rating and review, but it's really because it helps people find us. I will say that since I've talked about that more on this podcast and people have left more ratings and reviews, I have seen the podcast bump up in the search. So, you know, it really does help people just discover the podcast.
Yeah. And next time we'll be back with picking up in the 18th century with the secret occult societies that began inventing fantastical tales that would reshape the cards forever, including a little one you may have heard of called the Hermetic Order of the Golden Dawn.
I really cannot wait. Thanks for listening, everyone.
Thanks, everybody.